You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
How do we do it all, Launch Streeters? We don't. That's the motto of today's guest. Don't do it all. I felt an extreme sense of permission to say no after this interview with Clara Capano. She is a coach, performance expert, and the creator of the 52 Weeks to Clarity. I think our discussion around getting clarity, her process for going from vision to structure to boundaries, will be super beneficial as you go out there and drive innovation, new ideas. I also got a lot out of our conversation around how the feeling of confusion actually causes you to stand still, which I don't know about you, but I feel that sometimes. Then, once you get clarity from this podcast interview, I want you to go to the show notes for this podcast on our website and download a little gift. It's a video that shares our secrets for getting buy-in for your ideas from the people that matter, all those decision makers that can make or break your ideas. Believe me, this has worked time and time again for me, and I want to share it with you. All right, let's do this. Clara, thank you so much for joining me today. And we live in the same place and didn't know it. So it's even more fun to connect.
Small world. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited. So let's start by giving Launch Streeters some context. How did you become a performance coach?
Well, you know, I sort of stumbled on it by accident. I think when I was younger, it was a vision that I always had, but I never really knew what it was called. And on my way growing up after college, I was planning to go to law school. And on the way to law school, I sort of veered off and was brought into the world of real estate and really found a home there. And I was selling in real estate. Then I was invited to join into management and leadership. And from there, I really followed my heart, which was more in the coaching and training aspect. And once I got into that in about 2009, I knew that's where my home was. And that's where I started really investing my time and my training and growing that branch of my business.
So I'm curious, because I think a lot of us, as you know, as you were telling your story, it made me think, oh, you know, there's a lot of us out there that have that passion, that thing we want to get better at, because that's what we really love to do and to give to others. When you decided to make that your core or your, you know, what you were focusing on, what did you do to make that happen?
You know, I am a student by heart. I love school. I'm one of those crazy people where I would be a professional student for the rest of my life.
Sounds good to me.
So yeah, so I really just, dove in and started reading and learning as much as I could about it. I went back and got my master's in organizational development and leadership from Denver University. So that was a big thing that I did. I also followed a lot of who I call my mentors, which were people like Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Darren Hardy, and really learned a lot from them and built my business that way. And then I also joined on to who I call my ninja family. There is a system that's called Ninja Selling, and I am one of their coaches as well as instructors. So I've just learned a lot from them and running their system as well.
You know, I so appreciate what you're saying about following your mentors. I always talk about it as stalking people who are doing what I want to do, because there's so many lessons and somebody somewhere has done it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I took away from Jim Rohn is he always talks about who is the person that you want to become. And so I think in looking at my mentors, I really said, okay, who is that person? If I want to be a speaker, a trainer, a better coach, who do I need to become? And I just learned, and I spend about an hour every day still in personal development, listening to other podcasts, reading, just absorbing as much as I can. And because I know that every day I can learn something new and get stronger.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I want to dig into some of your wisdom that you've gained over the years. One of the things that you talk about on your website, and one of you say your motto is you can't do everything, which I think for a lot of us, particularly in the entrepreneurial spirit kind of space, so, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or an entrepreneur, we try to take so much on. So talk to me about that motto and then tell me what I should be doing.
Well, I did the same thing, and I finally had to take my little superwoman cape and put it off and put it in a drawer. Because I am an overachiever. And for me, it's always about doing more. And I found that as I tried to take on more, the less effective I really was.
Wow.
And the more that I tried to absorb, do, control, the worse off I was as a coach and a trainer because things started to fall behind. And I realized that it is better to be world-class at a few things than mediocre at many things. And in becoming the person I want to become, that means that you have to say no to some things. And so many of us, we look at that word of saying no and it scares us and we feel bad and guilty that we're letting other people down. But the reality is saying no actually brings us freedom. And it's our own internal battle we have with the word no that we have to get over. And I really try to focus on coming from a place of servitude. How can I best serve others? And I can't serve others when I'm doing too many things.
So let's talk a little bit about no, because I did want to ask you about that. First of all, why is no so hard? Why is that such an internal battle for us?
I believe it comes from fear. I know for me, I have a huge problem with disappointing others. It's just a program that I have from being a kid. I never want to disappoint or let others down. So my internal battle was when I said no, I immediately went to, who am I letting down? And what I found is that the main person I was letting down was me. And then it went to my family. And then it went to other clients, because every time you say yes to something, you have to say no to something else. So I really started examining, what was I saying no to? And those were the things that were sort of on the opposite end of what I really wanted to accomplish and the people that I really wanted to help.
You know, it's so interesting what you're saying. I was just thinking about how, while you were talking that the other day, I said no to a keynote engagement. The fee was just drastically too low. It wouldn't have been fair to the other people who, you know, pay. And I got off the phone call and it was a perfectly lovely phone call. And I felt so guilty for like 24 hours, but you're so right. It had nothing to do with them. I just felt really bad.
Mm-hmm. We do. And when that happens, you know, I have little questions that I ask myself, because sometimes it makes good business sense to take the lower fee. But many times it doesn't. And so I really always try to ask myself, you know, if I agree to do this, what am I saying no to, so that I can use that as a compass? And then I ask myself, is this in alignment with the person that I want to become and with the goals that I want to achieve? So I really work hard to ask those questions before I respond yes or no, so that I can have sort of a compass to help guide me so I make better decisions.
Will you say those two things again? Because I think those are so important. So, I mean, it's so easy, or maybe we just jump to saying yes. But before you say yes, I think there were two things in there that you ask yourself.
So if I agree and say yes to this, what am I then saying no to? And then the second question was, if I agree to do this, is this in alignment with the person that I want to become? And is it in alignment with the goals that I want to achieve?
Oh, I love those two. Those are so powerful. All right, launch readers out there, I hope you will write that down and remember that the next time someone comes to you with a request, or it's even something that you are requesting of yourself, because Clara is so right. When you say yes to something, you say no to something else. So let's flip it. So what do you see with your coaching clients when they start to say no? What happens to them?
Oh, a whole lot of not great things. They really get off track. Yeah. You know, I work with a lot of real estate professionals. So what I find with them and with all business owners that I work with and leaders, the first thing that tends to get pushed aside is their personal life and their personal goals. And then they start not taking care of themselves and they start not taking care of their relationships. One of the things, and it was a quote from, I believe, Stephen Covey, and he said, if you really want to know someone's priorities, look at their bank account and their schedule.
I did that one month. It was horrifying, actually.
It is. And that's what I would say is the number one thing is they start making bad decisions in other areas of their life and they don't take care of themselves. They then start taking on the wrong opportunities, the wrong clients. You mentioned about a speaking gig. They start doing these things that are the antithesis of what is really going to help them move forward because they're so busy. Now they're overcommitted. The other thing that happens is resentment. Mm. They start resenting themselves. Because they know the instant they agree to do the wrong thing, they know it internally. So they start getting mad at themselves and beating themselves up. They then start resenting their job, their clients, and it's a downhill battle from there.
So if I start to say no more often to the right things, or I start to say yes to the right things and no to the wrong things, what then happens to my performance, my balance, all those things you were talking about that suffers in the last scenario?
It will almost immediately start to rise. You will feel more confident because you are in control, because whoever is in control of your time really is in control of your life. So you will feel more confident and in control of your own business and your own life. You're going to find that you're more present in what you do because it really is the things that feed you and get you excited and that you're passionate about. You will become a higher level performer because you're going to be performing at the top of your game. You're going to have better relationships and be more present in all you do.
Sign me up. I say no to that. Is that what I'm supposed to say? So I was reading this article where you were interviewed. It was in Forbes. And you said something about I needed, you know, boundaries and structure and vision. And I think those three are so important, particularly for innovators out there who are trying to achieve new things. We've got to really kind of cut out the noise. Yes. But I'd love for you to break down each of those and why they're so important. So the boundaries, the structure, and the vision.
Perfect. I'll start with vision first, because I think that's what starts everything off, because you can't really develop your structure and your boundaries until you know exactly where you want to go. And so that's where the book that I wrote, Find Your Focus, 52 Weeks of Clarity, is really about helping you get clear on your vision, your purpose. So for me, I had to really step back and take a look at what was it that I really wanted to accomplish? When I started my business, I wanted to help everybody. So I was taking on all sorts of clients in all different fields. And I realized that there were some fields I was better at than others, and I had to really get clear on who was my ideal client. What was my purpose? What did I really want to help them with? And again, going back to who is it that I really want to become? So in putting that vision together, I became more focused in what I needed to do and the person that I needed to be every day. And that vision really is what propelled me into the next step. The next step for me was in the structure. I had to then develop a structure, both weekly and daily, of what were the core foundational things I need to do in order to achieve that vision. So for me, I have about 8 or 9 things that I know if I do weekly, I will have the business and the life that I want to do. And I call these my rocks. And I always start out with my life rocks, because for me, life is the most important thing. And I do what I do, not only to serve others, but that's so I can have the life that I want. So as I put my week together, the very first things that go in there are my life, my time with my son, my time with my family and friends, and also time to take care of myself, to exercise and to have downtime. Because if I don't have those things, nothing else matters. Then I get into the things that I do for my work to build my business. And those would be things such as the blogs that I do, having time set aside for personal and professional development, doing handwritten notes, which I am a huge proponent of, making phone calls to outreach, to stay in connection with people. I want to do face-to-faces each week. And then I put my schedule together of when I'm going to be available to have time for my clients, for my phone calls, for my speaking engagements, and all of those things. So that everything is very regimented in my world, but I do that because I want to make time for everything. And when what is scheduled gets done. So I have time for projects, I have time for calls, I know my hours of operation, but I also have time for downtime.
Can I ask you a quick question before we go into boundaries or go on? So I love this idea of rocks because it's just so concrete, no pun intended, but you know, just in terms of what you do. But are you very specific about it? Like, you know, 30 minutes of no cell phone time with son, 30 minutes of blog writing, an hour of outreach, you know, whatever it is? Or is it just general, like I got to make sure I get to these things today?
Sure. It's a bit of both. So I have a morning routine. I'm an early bird. I get up at 5 a.m. and my morning routine is about 40 minutes long. And so I get up and the first thing I do is I get my coffee because I have to do that.
Yes, I'm with you on that 100%.
And then I do my affirmations, my gratitudes. I do a little journal writing. I usually watch something motivational for maybe just 5 minutes, 10 minutes to sort of get me in the game. And, you know, then I sort of look over my day so I'm prepped for my day. Then I head off to the gym, and I'm always at the gym from about 6 till about 6:45. So when I come back at 7 o'clock, I'm either ready to then dive into my day, or it's time to be with my son to get him up, to get him ready, and to take him to school. So it depends because I have those two different schedules. So my morning routine is very regimented. Then what I do is I, you know, generally do a lot of my calls. Friday tends to be my project day. A lot of people don't like to do trainings, speaking engagements, and coaching on Fridays. So that sort of becomes my flex day and then my project day. And when I work on projects, I do things in hour increments. And what I do, so if I have from 9 to 10, what I do is from 9 to 9:45, I shut down all distractions and I call this bubble time, where I step into my bubble and I work with no distractions for 45 minutes. Then I step out of my bubble for 15 minutes and I check my voicemails, my emails, assess if anything needs to be handled. And then I may step back into my bubble again, so that I can use that. I also use bubble time for a lot of my other things. I use it, you know, when I'm on a coaching call because I want to be present. But in between calls, I generally give myself about 15 minutes to do all those things before I get on a next call, also to get myself grounded. And as funny as it sounds, I use it with my son. So if we're sitting down at night, you know, from 5 to 5:45, I'm with Nicholas and I focus on whether it's doing homework, watching a movie, whatever it is that we're doing. Then at about 5:45, I'll say, oh, you know what? Let me go and get something to drink. And I'll check my voicemails, check my emails to see if anything came in that I needed to address before I go back and spend time with him. So that's sort of how I run my time and my structure.
Got it. I love the whole bubble concept too. It actually makes me feel good about shutting everything off and not concerned, because it's such a weird addiction, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah. And to know you're coming back to it though, and I've got to imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but that 45 minutes that you are in the bubble, you are probably way more focused, way more creative, you know, way more productive than if you're, you know, everything's dinging in the background for that time.
It is true. And what I found, the reason I came up with 45 minutes, it was initially taught to me to have 3 hours. And most people just can't go that long. I find that at about 45 minutes, monkey mind comes in.
Yeah.
And we start worrying what's going on. We have that FOMO, that fear of missing out. So I have just found, and even in the trainings that I do, I generally give a break at about the 45, 50 minute mark, because I know people start drifting.
Yeah.
And so it's a great way to just get up, stretch your legs, assess what's going on around you, and then come back with the purpose and the passion for the next 45 minutes.
You know, it's so funny that, Claire, I think it's so important what you're saying, because we think, oh, but if I do that, I lose 2 hours of work time in my day, whatever it is. But the truth is, you get so much more and better done, you know, better work mm-hmm. done in that time that you can afford
yes.
to do that.
Well, what happens is when we're getting distracted, you know, they studied people who were what they called, you know, multitaskers. And what they found is that, first of all, we spend about 2 to 3 hours in distraction each day. But when we are trying to do this multitasking and not blocking out the distractions, it really does take us twice as long to get something done.
That's amazing. Okay, I interrupted you because I wanted to ask.
Oh,
so thank you for that. I know we were getting on to boundaries.
Yes, so boundaries. Boundaries now, it's easy to have the boundaries because I know what my structure is and I know what my vision is. So this comes back to the saying no. So when somebody comes to me with either an opportunity or with what might be a distraction, I can very easily say, this is what I need to be doing because my structure is together. And then, is this in alignment with my goals and my vision? Well, I know that as well. So now if there's an opportunity that comes up, and I have speaking engagements that come too, and sometimes it's, you know, that's a great group, but that's not really my ideal group. So
yeah.
that doesn't fit in my goals. So I'm going to say no to that and have boundaries. As far as distractions, if people come in or they need something, it's very easy for me to say, you know, I have a deadline to get this done by 9:45. Will you be available after that? And I can give you a call back.
I love it. I love the boundaries. I can't lie. I have to work on that. Mm-hmm. I sometimes struggle with those. I start with really good intentions and then over time they seem to kind of get thinner and thinner.
Sure. And please don't get me wrong. I'm not perfect either, but I know that it does help me
yeah.
when I really can focus on asking those questions. And what I have found is, you know, people are very respectful of your boundaries. If they come to you,
yeah.
I can say, you know, I would love to do that, but I've already committed to something else. And it's just people really get it. They're not mad at you the way that we think they are, but we have to be open and honest with them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I mean, I'll just very quickly share that I have a family member who often takes business calls on vacation. And she had said, I just can't get him to stop calling me. And my response to her was, well, you need to stop answering the phone. So,
yes.
you know, it sounds, you know, horribly mean and easier said than done in some situations, but you're mm-hmm. right. We create our own boundaries. You know, you had mentioned really quickly your book, Find Your Focus, The 52 Weeks to Clarity. Love the play on name. And we'll put a link in the show notes for sure. But would you share just a couple of your favorite tips out there? Maybe something that launch readers could do right away to up their game.
Oh, God, there's so much. I think just really setting time to get clear, you know, to sit down in quiet and really just make a list of what excites you and what makes you passionate. What really are your values? And going back to that Stephen Covey, you know, what are your priorities? Look at your schedule and don't be afraid to be honest, because it's sometimes really scary that we have to be honest with ourselves, but really look at your schedule and say, is my schedule set up with what's important to me and what my values are? And start there. And then I also think just honest communication with people, you know, in your business and in your personal life. In your business, you know, when you sit down with them, say, this is how I work. This is how I communicate. These are my hours of operations. And not being afraid to put yourself first. The other thing that I would do, and I know that this is now the third one, but this is really important, it's self-care. We have got to take care of ourselves. We cannot serve others. We are no good to others if we are sick, overwhelmed, overworked, and just burned out. Yes. So you have got to make sure that there is time. And it's not about, so when I exercise, yes, I want to look good and I want my clothes to fit me right. But on a higher level, I cannot do what I do if I'm sick. I cannot be on the road traveling and giving speaking engagements. I can't be focused and present with my clients, giving them the strategies that they need if I'm tired. So you have to take care of yourself to better serve. And I think that we have that idea of being selfish and taking care of ourselves is selfish. And it really is just the opposite.
I love that last one. I think it's just, you speak the truth on that. You know, I'm curious, because I know you do a lot of great coaching. When clients call you to engage with you, what pain are they experiencing? What are they telling you on the phone that they're trying to get over?
You know, most of the time it's time. Most of them are just need help in managing their time better and leveraging their time because they're doing everything. As a small business owner, regardless of what industry you're in, oftentimes, you know, we're the home shop. So it's teaching them how to leverage their time and maybe learning what to delegate out. I would say the second pain point is finding time for themselves.
Yeah.
And having that work-life balance that a lot of people talk about.
And I have to imagine, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I have to imagine that people call and say, like, I just need to figure out how to manage my time. And as you peel back the layers of the onion, then it's really about their vision and their structure and their boundaries. Mm-hmm. And time is just the symptom of it all.
Correct. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had, I think it was in your book where I read this, that confusion causes you to stand still. And that means putting your dreams on hold. So I'd love to hear your perspective on why confusion is squelching our dreams and what the heck we do about it.
Well, it goes back to sort of what you were just saying of, you know, the time is just the underlying problem where it's really their vision. When people are confused and don't really know what their vision is, they don't really know what they should be doing, they stand still because they don't know what to do, you know? And if it's just like if you think about if you're going on a trip, well, you have to get clear on how are you going to get there, because you could drive there, you could fly there, you could walk there, you could take a bus there, and all of those options could confuse you and shut you down. So, but the second that you get clear, you're like, okay, I'm going to fly. Now let's look at the options. So it really is about understanding yourself, your passions, what it is that you really truly need to achieve, because until you can get that clarity going forward, you will just go in circles or just stand still.
So this may be a naive question, but how do I know if I'm confused?
I think you'll feel it. You'll feel it internally because you won't be in alignment with your true calling. I think you will also realize it because you will find that things are not getting done. You will allow for distractions because distractions will be an avoidance technique. And the thing that you're avoiding is going forward because you don't know what to do. So you will find ways to keep you in confusion until you can get yourself unlocked.
And do you think that, you know, we would describe it ourselves as confusion? Is it, you know, is procrastination, lack of clarity, are all those things kind of the way we would think about it, but what's ultimately is that kind of spool of confusion inside?
Yes, I think a lot of it is confusion and then fear. Procrastination is definitely a source of, is tied to confusion, because once you get clear, procrastination goes aside. And I think we've all felt it where when we are so excited to get something done, we're like a freight train going a million miles an hour forward, right? And nothing gets in front of us because we are so directed on getting that item done. That's what it feels like. And when oftentimes when we procrastinate, it's because we don't have that fire in our belly and know what we're working towards. But then I also think it's fear.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes our fear keeps us in confusion, because if we get real with ourselves, then, oh my God, we actually have to take action. And that can sometimes be scary too.
Do you have a couple, I imagine you do, a couple good tips on how to overcome fear? Because it's, you know, we hear all the cliches and the memes, right? Like embrace your fear, love your fear. And that's all great, but it's easier said than done.
So the one thing that really helped for me, it was realizing that it's not about me. Fear is very internal. And when we have fears, we're making it about ourselves. And what I learned to do from one of my mentors is stop making it about you and focusing on externally. So for example, I used to be very fearful of speaking in front of people, which is funny because that's what I do now.
You're such a great communicator.
Thank you. But I used to be afraid of it. And when we were talking about it, everything came up. What were you afraid of? I was afraid of sounding foolish. I was afraid of how I would look. Everything was about me. And the reality was, is why do I want to speak? I want to speak because I want to help others. I want to get others stronger. Everything that I wanted to do was about others. So in looking at the fear, I had to take myself out of the equation and focus on what I was doing and how it could help and serve others. And then I wasn't fearful anymore because it was no longer about me.
That's really interesting, to make it an external factor.
And so I think really looking at what can you gain? What are you going to, you know, be able to give at a higher level? And again, who is it that you want to become? But the fear is so internal. And also, I think you have to really identify what really is the worst thing that could happen. And as silly as it is, sometimes when we look at that, we're like, well, that's pretty stupid and I can handle that. So, you know, I think those two things can really help people work through fear.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I used to have a big fear of public speaking, not in the sense of I'm afraid to talk to a group, but more of oh my God, I'm getting on a stage with a microphone. Like there's a lot of people staring at me. And when I went through that exercise, it was like, well, the worst they could do is they would hate me or didn't like me. And then in 60 minutes is done anyway. And that actually happened once. Like when I first started, I bombed a couple times. We all do, right? And I still periodically do. Like it's the truth. And that's not the end of the world because they don't remember my name an hour later anyway. So
exactly. And it's funny because, you know, being a coach, I also have a coach. And those were the exact same thing. She's like, okay, so you bomb. She's like, do you think other people have bombed? And I said, well, probably. She's like, and they lived and they all survived. So, you know, you have to really just say what's the worst that could happen? And can you accept that? And can you move forward? Then why are you fearful?
Yeah, I love that. I love the kind of worst case scenario exercise, but I really appreciate launch readers. I hope you're paying attention to that. You know, if you really take your fear and start listing out and taking it to the next level and make it not about you, it becomes much easier to get over because then it's about what you're trying to do and your impact, which is just, I think that was a huge piece of advice right there. So I want to ask you about, you know, creativity, innovation. I tend to use the word innovation because it's all about putting it into action, but creativity is, you know, thinking differently. Where does that fit into all the stuff that you're talking about becoming the person you want to become, about high performance and achieving your dreams?
Well, I think it's about letting go a little bit. I think we get these ideas and these visions of what it's supposed to look like. Even in that concept of who do I want to become? Well, if I look at one of my mentors, and I'll just take Jim Rohn as one of my mentors, even though I can do some of the things to become more like Jim, I'm never going to be like Jim. I'm always going to be Clara. So I think when you're innovating and creating yourself and your message, you have to leave some freedom for authenticity and being able to really allow that to happen and to be vulnerable and open. And I think a lot of innovation and creativity is vulnerability. It's, you know, not being afraid to fall down, but it's also just sitting down and getting centered with yourself of, you know, what do you really want to do? What is your voice? You know, I tend to be a little bit silly and a little bit dorky, and that's how I present myself. And I tend to be very real. There's other people that are much more structured, and that's okay. You know, but you have to really allow yourself to build your brand, build your business on who you are. And there's a great book out there called The Go-Giver by Bob Berg. And he has these five laws to live by. And one of them is the law of authenticity. And when you show up as your true and authentic self, some people may not like you. And you know what? That's perfectly okay. Because the only people you really need are the ones that will accept you and trust in you in your process.
Did you find, I know I went through this phase at the beginning of my career in particular, I tried so hard to emulate the people that I admired. But in doing so, I lost a bit of my voice along the way and I had to get it back. And it felt not so much icky, but it just felt weird. And I knew it, right?
Yes.
I knew it in the moment. Like, this is not me. This is, you know, Jim Rohn, right? This is not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I had to really go through a process of getting it back. Did you go through that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And it was probably one of, I mean, ultimately, it brought me great success and wonders, but it was probably one of my things that held me back the most because I got started in my career. I was pretty young. I was in my early 20s and my mentor was an amazing, dynamic woman. And I just wanted to be like her so bad, but I could never be like her. And I think that's what took me so long to really leap out on my own because I didn't have my own identity. Because I was afraid to be me because I didn't think people would like me. And so it was a big, you know, worthiness issue that I had to fight through. And once I got really clear, and I think, you know, for me, it was more into, you know, my 30s and probably approaching my 40s, which I think part of it is just age and maturity. But once I got really comfortable with who I am, then I started owning that more and my true voice started coming out and it's just grown exponentially from there.
And did you find that once you really started to own your voice, that your business and life actually grew and got better? Because I think a little bit what you were saying earlier, not everyone's going to like it, but the people that do really like it and you kind of grow together.
Yes, 100%. It was once I started doing that, it was all, everything started going in motion. Everything started going in the right way. And yes, definitely.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about focus kind of peppered through this conversation. I would just love to hear kind of your thoughts on why that focus part is so important. I know we've talked about boundaries and clarity, but where does focus fit into that?
Well, focus is what allows you to get everything done, you know, and it's bringing in the vision, the structure, the boundaries, because when you truly are focused, that's where greatness happens. And you've got to be able to own that. You've got to be able to set up the boundaries to keep you focused. You have to have the structure that is in alignment with what needs to be there for you to focus on. And your vision is the ultimate driving force behind it. So once you have all three of those things, it's a lot easier to stay focused because you know where you need to be. And it's not easy because we have a lot of things externally. We have our families, our friends, we have other work demands, the distractions of social media, everything trying to pull us off focus. But having those other things in place and having that drive and that belief in ourselves is what helps to keep us focused.
I love that. Greatness happens in focus. I am going to write that on a sticky note and put it on my wall as a reminder to just turn off everything when I'm trying to really get something done and be at that place of high performance. That's so powerful. You know, one of the things, Claire, I'm hearing from you as I'm listening to all this incredible advice is, you know, it sounds like this is an ongoing process. You know, you don't just set your vision once and then set a piece of paper with your rocks on it and walk away. Like it's it's ongoing, like going to the gym. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that how this should work? That this is not something, it's not a point in time exercise.
No, it's ongoing and you always have to adjust it. You know, in my business, what I do with a lot of my clients is, you know, they may set out their business plan for an entire year, but every 90 days we're retuning it. Do we need to change our focus? Do we need to adjust things based upon what's going on externally, based upon where you are year to date and based upon the needs and demands of your personal life? So it's something I do a yearly business plan, a 90 day, I do a weekly plan. And then every day I just sort of check in because maybe I'm not feeling well and I need to adjust things so that I can have focus in the way that I need to have focus. So it really is an ongoing process.
So this is, I have to say, this has been such an invigorating conversation. So where can people go to connect with you, learn more?
Wonderful. So I have my personalized website, which is www.clarity.com, and it's clarity spelled clarity.com. I'm on Facebook under Clara Capano and Capano Consulting, Instagram under Clara Capano. I'm on Twitter at Clarity Capano. So they can find me in all those spots.
Awesome. We'll put all of those links in the show notes. My last question for you is, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? It can be hobby, passion, experience.
You know, I think the one thing that everybody is a little bit shocked about, although they're getting to know it more, is that I do a lot of kickboxing on the side, and that my other passion is surfing, even though I'm horrible at it.
And we're in Colorado.
Yes.
But I love the kickboxing. So do you do like Krav Maga style, or are you like straight up kickboxing?
No, I do. I actually belong to a gym called Nine Round Fitness. And so it's a circuit training that has no time frames. There's trainers always on staff. And I started doing it about a year and a half ago. I fell in love with it so much that I decided to open my own. So I'm in the process of opening one here in Arvada, Colorado.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. You tell me when the opening is and I will totally come and put on some gloves. That'd be so much fun.
I would love to have you there with me. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, Claire, this was fantastic. Like I said, I feel very invigorated after this call. So thank you. I think Launch Readers are going to get a lot out of this.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.